you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Welcome to Guys We Fucked.
Guys We Fucked.
I'm Christina.
I'm Corinne. We're sorry about last night. The anti-slut shaming podcast. I never stop.
Hey, fuckers, welcome to another episode of Guys We Fuck.
It's the Anti-Slut Shaming Podcast. I'm Corinne.
I'm Christina.
Welcome. So today's news update is actually kind of an update on something that we have talked about a couple weeks ago. There was the Sudanese teenager who killed her rapist husband and then was committed to a death sentence. But the death sentence has been lifted. So something good, happened.
Yay.
I know a couple people tweeted me about it because they were like, oh, we initially heard about this on the Guys We Fucked podcast. And that's amazing. She's 19 years old, as a reminder. She was sentenced to death by hanging last month by an Islamic court after stabbing and killing her cousin, whom she said her father forced her to marry. So on Tuesday, an appeals court commuted her sentence to 5 years in jail, which is still, you know, not good. But I mean, even in America, sometimes stuff like that happens, like, because you still can't murder people.
And that suck.
Unless it's in the heat of the moment. In jail instead, and a fine of 337,500 Sudanese pounds, which then they went put into British pounds. And
she has to pay a fine?
I still don't know what that is. Yeah, she does.
How's she gonna earn money in jail?
I mean, technically, you can earn some kind of money in America. I don't know how Sudan. I don't really know how things work there. But I mean, I'm guessing her family would probably, or if she has a friend, I don't know. But anyway, so that is, I mean, I know it's still not amazing, but it's, I mean, that's, it's a lot better.
And you were going to get hung and now you just got to spend 5 years in a prison.
Yeah.
I might take the 5 years, I guess.
Right. And I mean, she was found guilty of a premeditated murder, which even if someone does rape you in America, you can't do that. So, you know, I mean, I think that's a pretty, I'll take that as a win.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
That's good news.
Okay, Nora. All right. Hey, today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company that lets you message a licensed therapist from anywhere at any time. Can't imagine fitting another appointment into your life? Well, with Talkspace, therapy is as easy as sending a message to your therapist. No commutes, no leaving the office, no judgments. To match with the perfect therapist for a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, just go to Talkspace.com/GWF. Use code GWF and get $45 off your first month and show your support for this show. That's GWF at Talkspace.com/GWF.
Yeah, it's a great service. You can talk to a therapist via like a kind of like a Skype system, and then you can also kind of text them throughout the week. So it's nice if you're a person on the go.
Yes.
Very good. Come see us live. Guys, tonight's Nacho Bitches, the penultimate Nacho Bitches, sold out a week ago. So just if your last chance ever to come see Nacho Bitches is going to be Friday, July 27th at 11:30 p.m. at New York Comedy Club, which is 24th and 2nd in New York City. Tickets are $12 with code Nacho, and you know, there'll be good people there. I didn't book it yet, honestly, but someone will be there.
Tomorrow, June 30th, Wendy Starling and I are co-hosting Glamour Puss at Zinc Bar. So if you want to do that, you should come. It's going to be fun. There will be wigs. I don't know if there's tickets left because I haven't been checking, but they do sell out. So get them now and have a great day.
Seattle/Bellevue, Washington, July 12th through the 14th. Christina and I are bringing the Bitch Bishop tour to Parlor Live. We've been there before. It's a really fun venue. Make sure to buy those tickets now so we don't look like punk asses. And also, just a heads up, when you don't buy tickets to the shows, they make us wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my God, and do press.
And talk to what is usually a misogynist radio host. So like, honestly, we would really appreciate just if you didn't wait until the day of, if you're going to do it, because then after the show, when everyone's like, you guys look tired, it's like, yeah, well, we had to fight misogyny in every city in the U.S. at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Party in the U.S.
Anyway, you know, we should all have such fancy problems. And then Irvine, California, July 19th through 22nd, we're going to be at the Irvine Improv. This is our L.A. show. I know Irvine is not L.A., but it's 45 minutes.
Just fuck it. We're making the commute.
We will be staying in L.A. ourselves.
Yeah, so don't bitch about it.
So we're going to make that same drive every single day. But yeah, these are huge venues, so we really need to sell.
Be the change you wish to see in the world, guys. And if you don't want us to be cranky after the shows and have an energy to say hi, then you got to buy tickets.
And for remaining tour dates, go to sorryaboutlastnightcomedy.com/tours. And if we're not coming to your city and you want just some more chatter, the Two Less Lonely Girls podcast is available. It's 30 minutes every Monday about Justin Bieber. We fucking met Justin Bieber. So that episode is available now.
Is he hot?
Oh, I mean, I never thought he was hot, but
he's cute.
He was very nice.
Yeah.
Thanks so much to our second sponsor of the day, Blue Apron. Skip meal planning and get straight to cooking with Blue Apron. Enjoy unforgettable meals inspired by the vibrant cooking of the Mediterranean, like seared salmon and spicy orange salsa. Centered around fruits, veggies, lean meats, and plenty of olive oil, these recipes, like I say, plenty of olive oil.
Don't worry, we got enough.
Everything's very slippery. These recipes are deliciously nutritious. With incredible ingredients and chef-designed recipes, Blue Apron lets you see the power of what food can do, which is like nourish you. Blue Apron delivers farm fresh ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team. Blue Apron offers three plans: the two-person meal plan, the family meal plan, and the wine plan if you're on a liquid diet, bitches. I love Blue Apron. I've talked about it before. For someone who loves to cook but doesn't get a chance to cook that much, it not only is great food, it tastes good. Usually really even looks good.
Yeah.
The instructions are very easy to follow. And then also it helps me to be more creative in my everyday cooking because I learn what kinds of foods go together, how to season things properly, how to cut or cook things in ways that I didn't think. I actually learned a new way to cook salmon that I didn't think of before. That was the most delicious way I've ever cooked salmon, which was by putting it in a frying pan on the actual stove and then putting silver foil over it. And it was perfect. So highly recommend it. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free at blueapron.com/GWF. Again, that's blueapron.com/GWF. To get your first three meals free, Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
And then after your titties are all big from eating all those fresh foods and shit, you got to support them. And you got to support them with Third Love. Using thousands of real women's measurements, Third Love designs bras with breast size and shape in mind, which is really what you want in a bra designer, so that they fit impeccably and even better. And now, since adding 24 new sizes, Third Love offers the most options for of any brand. You know, I can read. A total of 70 sizes. Jesus Christ, every titty is unique. Find your fit in 60 seconds online. Order and try on at home with Third Love's Fit Finder quiz. It's actually fun and takes less than a minute. This is hands down the most comfortable bra you will own. I have titties. I wear Third Love. They're wonderful. The labels are even tagless, so they're not itchy, which I really do appreciate. And because Third Love guarantees a perfect fit, returns and exchanges are free and easy. Boy, I love the way Third Love cups my titties. Third Love knows a perfect bra for everyone. So right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. You just got to go to thirdlove.com, all spelt out, T-H-I-R-D, /GWF now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That is thirdlove.com/GWF. For 15% off today.
All right. And thank you to Spotify. Holy shit.
Love them.
Yeah, we truly love Spotify from the bottom of our hearts. Like, they are paying us to say this right now, but I do want to be clear that even if they weren't, I would say nice things about them.
A weird ad copy at the beginning, but
I'm going to read it just as they wrote it.
Yeah, you
because
should.
This
I
is a commitment
you.
To their art form.
Okay.
And you know what? I don't, you know, it's like maybe they're not great at comedy, but it's like I don't have a music streaming service. So it's like we all have a gift to give. Some things were meant for each other. Fries and milkshakes, selfies and duck face. And now, guys, we fucked in Spotify. You
is this
know.
A Hallmark card?
Duck face. Yes, the same app that has millions of songs now has also thousands of podcasts. Listen to all your favorite shows and discover new ones by browsing categories such as lifestyle, news, comedy, sports and recreation, and more. Plus, you can save podcasts offline for when you don't have an internet connection, that's like on cool. an airplane, which I do a lot, and use Spotify Connect to seamlessly play podcasts to different devices. Spotify is excellent. Not only is it really easy to use and it's always works unlike some other apps, I have discovered a ton of new music and new podcasts and new comedians via Spotify. It really gets to know you. The algorithms that they're working with are really strong. And every time someone's like, I made you a playlist, or like an app's like, I made you a playlist, I'm like, bitch, you don't know me. But then Spotify makes me one. I'm like, oh my God, are we in love?
Is this my boyfriend?
Oh my God, is this my soulmate? And I find all these new, you know, musicians who have like 600 followers, but I'm so happy to give them to support because I would never have found out about it if it wasn't for Spotify.
I fucking love. So I've been a Spotify subscriber since it came out. I fucking love that app. I use it every single day.
Yeah. It's great. I've paid for it long before they paid for us. So
yeah.
To subscribe to our show, just search for Guys We Fucked. And again, this is free. Tap follow and get every new episode delivered to you. Podcasts on Spotify. They're streaming right now. And now.
But what about now?
I think also now.
Okay.
Still now. Thanks, Spotify. We love you.
We really do.
Okay, so I mean, the personal this week, we both saw Kathy Griffin at Carnegie Hall. She played two venues in New York City this week. One was Carnegie Hall and one was Radio City. Radio City was first, but Carnegie Hall was actually the first booked gig. So it was sold out.
Sold out very quickly.
It was what I would call the super fans. Like, it's very important for me if I love someone to be at their first show that they put online, because it shows like that we care more and we're also better people.
So true.
But I love her, and I was so excited because have you seen Kathy Griffin live before?
I've never seen her live. I've seen her specials.
Okay. And I've been a fan of her for years. This was at least the third time, if not more than that, that I've seen her live. I saw her Broadway show. I saw her in another theater in New York City. I might have even seen her outside of New York City. I love her. She's one of the reasons I started comedy. People are always like bad mouthing her, which I don't get. I mean, like, if you just don't like someone or don't think they're funny, like,
then
that's fine.
Okay.
But I love her. And I think, in my opinion, this was the best live performance I've ever seen. She did 2.5 hours and she told the entire story of what happened to her after she posted the picture holding up the Donald Trump mask with the ketchup dripping down. She went through a full FBI investigation, which I don't think people know that.
I also think it's interesting that the photographer said, do you want this to go live while during the photo shoot?
Mm-hmm.
She said, okay, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he sent it to TMZ.
Yeah.
And I also didn't know that the head of TMZ is like besties with Trump.
Yeah.
And that they talk policy, which is, makes sense if you pay attention to the news and how it's going. But
and it's also disturbing to have the president be in cahoots with someone who controls
disgusting?
Like our celebrity, because I think getting to people through celebrity and through gossipy news that we think is, you know, quote unquote harmless, is a very deceitful tactic.
Yeah, it's stupid.
But it's kind of smart. it is a super deceitful, well, I mean, and not morally correct.
It's how,
but
it's snaky.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
It's very interesting. And so I think it's like just a good reminder to like, just because something isn't about politics doesn't mean it's not about politics.
Oh, absolutely.
Everything is always sprinkled with a little bias.
She really, Kathy Griffin during that set really told us a lot of shit.
Oh, like, I know.
Oh my God. One of the interesting things that I really liked, Jeff Zucker, who's CNN.
Yeah.
She had been hosting New Year's Eve and it was a 90-minute program and they wanted to increase it from 90 minutes to 4 hours. And she did not have agents at the time. So she knew Jeff Zucker, called him and said, hey, if you're going to do this, I want to raise.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, how dare you ask? How are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Whatever. fired her. She called him back crying and said, okay, we'll keep you on for the 4 hours instead mm-hmm. of 90 minutes. And I'm going to dock your pay by 30%. Mm-hmm. And then she went over how she got fired from pretty much every single thing after that photo was released. And
including Squatty Potty sponsorship. Again, just a big fuck you to Squatty Potty as a reminder. Potty, yeah. Fuck you.
You're fucking idiots.
Fuck you.
We sold so many Squatty Potties, ironically, from that great ad you did.
Hey, get
stupid.
A stool or a fucking
stack of books.
Books.
But so this guy, this photographer that took this picture in Kathy's home, sent it directly to the head of TMZ. And then that shit show happened. And then she got fired from everything. And then she talked about how Billy Bush, mm-hmm. the good old creepy fucking.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought he was a creep regardless of any of that tape. But he was in the tape, if you don't remember, I understand, but where Donald Trump said you gotta grab him by the pussy, and Billy Bush was like, yeah, I guess when you're bad, you can do whatever you want. I have a small dick. And then Billy Bush got fired from his network, but he got a $9 million severance package. And I was like, well, isn't that nice? Okay, which one of these people actually did something terrible? And it was him.
Yeah, I mean, so
really, the disparities of how much women get punished for things versus men getting punished.
Well, it was so much. It was so there was, and it was also, I love to hear like the only people who like stood by her, like Bette Midler stood by her, and there were so few people. And Amy Schumer, to her credit, stood by Kathy.
Yeah. She had a funny. Mm-hmm. She was saying basically how all these celebrities reach out to her and what she read. Billy mm-hmm. Bush sent her a creepy ass fucking weird letter.
Mm-hmm.
She read the letter. It was fucking hilarious.
Yeah,
like, that man is an alien.
Yeah,
he's a lizard person if they exist. And then
he's cut from the Ryan Seacrest cloth, though. All those weird hosty people are,
they just, something's up with them. And then
they're bots.
When Kathy did the apology video and she like was she didn't wear any makeup or whatever, but she was like really close to the camera, and I think she had said Amy sent her a video, was like, your hair looks great, or something, right?
Or I think she said, your hair looks terrible.
Yeah. I said, why is your hair look so shitty?
It's just, you know, it's always good
that was really funny.
And I think it's great. And I mean, and it's also another thing that I liked about it was she said that at the time she was set to do some like book tours with Al Franken.
Yeah.
And Al Franken basically called her immediately and was like, I can't be associated with you anymore. And then, you know, not too long after,
because everyone's perfect, Al,
scandal breaks. And that's just I don't know. It's, you know, it's just, it's the fair weather friends thing. It's like people who stand by you when you're doing badly are the memorable ones. Rosie O'Donnell was another one. Jim Carrey stood by her.
Oh my God, Jim Carrey.
They're not even really friends. And she's like, she just got a call from Jim Carrey that truly like made her day better. I loved everything about it.
Yeah.
And just like, so, you know, as a woman, as a fan, but then as a comedian, you know, Kathy basically explained like she had gone back to bed after this photo shoot. And then all of a sudden she wakes up and she has all these text messages like, I heard what happened. How are you holding up? And I was like, holy shit, I have been through that. Yeah. Like anyone who said anything on social media and then you wake up from like a fucking groggy nap and you're like, what is happening? It's just people love to attack others on social media.
I really do wish we could talk about the people, shitty things that people do without the expectation that let's take all their things away.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's not, and I think I've been thinking about this a lot.
It's not the solution either.
No, and it's not effective, and it's only going to do damage. But people get on bandwagons, and I definitely think, I forget what when we talked about the Louis thing mm-hmm. a long time ago before the New York mm-hmm. Times had broke it, I forget what I wanted to look back and go back and listen to what I said, but I do feel like I was on this like bandwagon-y kind of like, yeah, fuck him. And it's like, okay, can we just talk about this for what it is? It was a shitty thing. Let's talk about it and maybe not do it. You don't got to take away all his career shit. Like, you can't erase the fact that he's a great comedian, and you can't.
Right.
And I just hate these extremes.
I think it was also confusing at the time, though, because that was kind of like the start of a lot of the Me Too
I
stuff.
Know.
And then we didn't realize how bad things were going to get.
I know.
And so there is some perspective now, you know, hindsight's always 20/20. But yeah, it's just been very interesting. And I mean, I know this is something we've talked about a lot. I think even later in this episode, we talk about it. But just like everyone has something shitty in their past or in their closet, and, you know, goes into what John Ronson talks about all the time. But, you know, it's like the public shaming and everything, you know. And even when I saw Amy Schumer act in a way that I just thought was like completely crappy, like, you know, I wanted to mention this thing, you know, her how she was a sister to Kathy Griffin, because it's like, yeah, no, I don't like
She's still really funny.
Yeah, she's really funny, and I still
you
I
don't gotta boycott her shit.
Yeah,
at all.
I do think differently of her now, and that's gonna take a long time to go away. But you know, it's like we've all done garbage things.
Oh, I've done terrible things.
Anyway, okay, so on this week's episode, this is the last episode of our prides. Oh, you know what? Actually, do you want to read an email?
Oh, yeah, let's
I
read
did
an
have
email.
One email, and it is let's associated it. To this pride series.
Oh, good.
Do you want to read it or?
You can read it.
Okay, so it says, what if I'm into girls and I don't know? I don't know. I think about that a lot,
actually.
Call
me. I don't know either.
It says, hey there, you hear this a lot, but I need to first express how grateful I am to you two for doing what you do. Your podcast has made me so much more confident in myself and more comfortable talking about sex. My boyfriend is also forever grateful. We saw you guys live and he loved you guys. Nice stuff. Okay. I've been wanting to ask you guys for advice about the possibility of being sexually interested in girls. I'm a 24-year-old woman from a very small conservative town in a very small state. I have only ever been with men, and I have been in multiple long-term relationships. The idea of possibly being attracted to women has been in the back of my mind for a few years now. I have had a few sexy dreams about women, but never anything more than kissing and really liking it. I also discovered that I get really turned on when I see lesbian porn, but thought maybe that's normal because I can obviously relate to a girl being pleasured. Mm-hmm. I am afraid that because of where I live, I am not being exposed to many people and opportunities to explore myself. I often wonder if I lived somewhere else where the whole town didn't know each other and there were a lot more people, would I try to pursue something with a woman? Could I be suppressing some part of me by not exploring this? I do really enjoy having sex with men, but perhaps I could be having more enjoyable experiences that I don't know about. How do I figure this out? I would love to hear your perspective on this, as I do with many other subjects. Thanks a lot.
I would go, well, you can't move. I mean, moving is a big ask. I was going to say uprooting and then going to a place where, I mean, New York, I've experimented with women in New York, and I probably wouldn't have been able to do it had I been in a small town in Pennsylvania. And I still want to do it. I don't care. Love. Is it dead? I don't know. You give your thoughts because I have only negative things to add.
Well, I mean, for
I'm
me,
in a bad mood.
I think it's like, I think there is, I was actually just talking about this with my mother over dinner before Kathy Griffin. I always do say, and you've probably heard me say it before in the podcast, yes, I consider myself to be heterosexual, but maybe I just haven't found the woman who is my soulmate yet.
Totally.
And I think it's important to always be open to those. And like, if you feel a feeling that feels different, like follow it.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, I also think, especially in this day and age where we're so, you know, everything is like where everyone's gender fluid and you don't be confined by these things. I think sometimes it's like pushing these ideals that like maybe you're just like a fucking regular boring heterosexual and you don't need to. So it's like I think it's like the talk that is going on in a current time could get into your head and make you think things that are not true. But I don't know. Like on the Kinsey scale, I would say I'm like pretty heterosexual. I'm not saying that I've never seen a woman that I was not attracted to. I have kissed a woman one time in my life years and years ago. Didn't do anything for me.
Right.
But I mean, maybe that time will come again. But I mean, unless you're truly feeling like these urges, like homosexual urges, I don't think it's something that like your life will not be complete if you don't move and kiss a woman.
I took this girl out that I kind of know for drinks in to discuss the possibility of having a three-way with somebody, and she did say to me, hey, just so you know, like if you were ever interested, I'm bi, because I said I consider myself straight, possibly bi curious, but I don't know, not curious enough for me to label it that,
right?
And she said, you know, I've never dated a woman either, and you know, I know we're gonna, you know, talk about doing this thing, whatever. But if you were ever interested, I would date you. And I'm like, oh, you know what? Sure.
You said, you know what? Sure.
I didn't say that to her, but I was like, okay. I was very flat. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, she's like this hot, sexy woman.
Yeah,
I mean,
it feels nice when people like you, and like, I think there's nothing wrong with being just like open to it. But I also don't think you have to go out of your way, or like risk. No, I don't want to say risk, but like there's a difference between like fighting for what you know is true. Like if you are homosexual and you are being suffocated in a small town, yes, you need to chase that. But if you're just like, maybe I want to like make out with a girl and I would like it. Like, I don't think you need to.
You just
like,
listen to a Katy Perry song. Yeah, that's all
your
was.
Whole life to do that. And you're 24. Opportunities will arise. Totally. And if you're meant to have a relationship with a woman later down the line, like it will certainly happen. Especially at 24, I don't think you have to force these things.
Yeah.
And you can continue masturbating to lesbian porn and enjoying it and, you know, just following things as it goes. But yeah, I mean, I just don't think you need to lead with your sexuality really at any point in your life. Okay. So this week's guest, last of our Pride series, he's a very not stereotypical gay man.
True.
We love him. We've had him on before, but we love him so much. We invited him back on. He has a Netflix 15-minute special coming out July 3rd in the 15-minute series, The Comedy Lineup. Please give a warm welcome to Tim Dillon.
He hella mean with her, risk ain't mean with it. He in the drop top, pull up to the scene with her, riding dirty. But the nigga fucking clean with it. Open boy stands, yo, he pull some magazine with it. He hella mean with her, risk ain't mean with it. He in the drop top, pull up to the scene with her, riding dirty. But the nigga fucking clean with it. Open boy stands, yo, he pull some magazine with it. He hella mean with it, risk ain't mean with it. Dirty Sprite, cause he like the portaline in it. He the type, he like to smoke the green with it. Ballin' hard, that nigga Mr. Clean with it. I'm the type of bitch you need to let your mother know. I'm the type of bitch that hold it down, keep control. And I ain't gotta say it twice, he let them hoes know. A week later, bought me on phone, six and rolls go. You savage, and I'm the fucking baddest. And
for all right, we're here bitch, with the one and only Tim Dillon.
Thank you so much for having me, ladies. I appreciate you allowing me to come back. This
Hell
is my
yeah.
second time. I know you don't repeat people usually.
Yeah, it's an honor. You, and John Ronson.
Yeah, no, I
you,
I
John Ronson
that.
And John Campanelli, the greats.
Yeah,
thank you. I don't know who they are. Those are the two people. But I'm very. Is John Ronson related to Samantha Ronson?
I don't know.
Lizzie Lohan's.
I did Google that one day. They are not.
Okay.
So I was like, that'd be fun.
No, he's an author and also my celebrity crush.
Okay. Well, hey, I just, you know, I'm honored to be here.
We were talking.
I started comedy in 2010.
Yeah.
This was one of the shows I wanted to get on.
Now,
this was a, I was
I
really
can't
tell
that it's
amazing because this didn't exist yet. So
don't
that's
make it awkward.
Pretty
Corinne.
Cool.
I listened to this with my parents growing up.
Oh, that's good. When I was five.
Wow, you look terrible.
Away.
You look very bad.
I know.
Well, we were talking about how you were saying our Republicans need to calm the fuck down, and that, well, Roe v. Wade is now in the talks of. We're going to fucking
make a little reversey poo.
Well, here's what.
They really care about human beings.
The thing is, this time we're in right now is bad for a lot of people, but it's also bad to be creative. It's really bad to be creative right now because you feel like you're like constrained by this need to have everything you're doing and saying say
have a message.
Something. Have a message. And that's not really how good comedy happens.
Yeah.
Funny needs to come first. And then you can also have a message and a perspective, and that's great. But if all you're doing is trying to back into that funny with the perspective being first, you get a lot of what we see right now, which is a lot of very people having a lot of similar takes.
Ugh, for
on
real.
Things.
Every fucking very, special is the same shit.
It's very homogenous, and that's what happens.
And every day someone releases a new sex podcast. So
yeah. I mean, well, you guys are the OGs, and then everybody's like, that worked out, we want to do it.
Yeah. Well, which is I think it's the conversations that need to be happening, but it's like, okay, put your funny onto it.
Right.
Well, that's
your
why I was actually
funny.
Happy until Roseanne went ape shit on fucking Twitter.
Right.
No pun intended.
Right.
I was happy to see something with a different perspective on TV because it's just, I watch the same stuff, and it's like, even though I do agree with a lot of these liberal views, it's like, I want to see other things, other perspectives.
No, Roseanne as a show was a good move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Roseanne personally is reckless.
Right.
And
I mean, everyone kind of knew that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a show about white trash because she is white trash. It was not, she was not playing a character.
Yeah. I mean, I think the somebody should have went and took her phone. You know,
I mean, that
no,
needs to happen to a lot of people.
I know.
Oh,
that,
I know.
I mean, literally, like, they probably needed to have a sit down with her and say, listen, let the show speak for itself.
Yeah.
I don't think everybody needs to have a public persona. I think that we everybody feels like they do.
They really do.
Right. And I think for somebody like Roseanne, you got to show that people like, you have millions of people watching it. Say what you want to say through the show.
Yeah.
And if you can't say it through the show, say it to your friends in your home that is a beautiful home.
Yeah.
Do that. Yeah. Don't call.
She must be getting something out of tweeting it, though.
Well, yes.
Because it's the ego, but I'm like, don't you already have enough ego? You're Roseanne. You're a great comedian.
Yes.
Come on.
Because I think Twitter is this uniquely dangerous thing, because I think it's designed for it. It really, we like combat. That's what we like. We love watching fight videos. You know, it goes back to the Roman Colosseum. People getting torn apart by animals and gladiators. Like, this is just what we're into. And now, you know, on Twitter, it really, those primal instincts that we have in all of us, this website, I mean, this app is just specifically designed to bring all of those out. So, and I think somebody like Roseanne, I think part of the joy of somebody like her being on Twitter is she knows that she's in a way driving the national conversation by what she's saying. It's uniquely powerful to feel that with you know, however many characters, what's the character limit?
140. I think they increased
that
it, though.
You can drive the national conversation with two sentences.
Yeah.
Is hard to not have. It's a drug. It's like the Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring. It's like, here's all this power in the palm of your hand. Now, don't use it.
Well, and it's like, and I've been, I get that. That makes complete sense. Like, I there's always an audience waiting for you.
Correct.
So if you're lonely and you're like, oh, I'm just sitting around, this is kind of not really,
I mean, I can't get a Twitter following. I tweet all day. I love Hitler. I can't get anyone. And then I'm like, fuck Hitler. I go the other way. You know, no one care. I don't know what to do. I have videos of me just punching toddlers in the face in Juice Generation. Right. I don't know what to do. What a specific
shitty. There's a lot of toddlers in Juice Generation.
New York reference, that
the
is.
Fuck
there's
out.
Like, you know, but at the end of the day, it's like the Republicans right now have come into power. It's like if somebody took over a company. And instead of having a meeting and going, hey, guys, like, I've been in companies where they've changed hands. A new manager comes in, whatever. And they come in, they go, hey, listen, we're going to change some things. We want to let you all know that you've been doing a good job. And we hope to continue with you guys. And then you fire them quietly throughout the week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trump's crew came in and they started throwing people out the window. Without coming in and saying anything, without even saying, I'm the new boss, no welcome email, just desks, chairs, people out the window.
Very Medicare, 9/11, yeah.
Medicaid, immigration, Roe v. Wade. I mean, now the Supreme Court, you have these conservatives gloating like, we're going to go back. They are literally saying we're going to go back in time to take away gay marriage and Roe v. Wade. And listen, I am not a leftist. I'm not a Marxist. I believe capitalism is a flawed system, but it has a value that should be preserved. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're in right now isn't capitalism. We have basically institutionalized criminality is a lot of what referred to as capitalism, which is why they're so sick of it. And I understand that. And I don't think the answer to that is government controls on every industry. I don't believe that. But as somebody who has conservative views and stuff like that, I've always believed that conservatism was also about temperance, about being relaxed, not about being, you know, an ideologue in the sense. Now, a lot of people agree with me and they'll point to the Christian right and everything. And that's fine. There's lots of examples that can disprove what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
But to me personally, something about conservatism is not only political, it's temperamental. It's the idea that I'm suspect of wide sweeping changes that you're going to make to society. I'm just suspect of them. I'm suspect of the government's ability to make me happy as a human being. I'm not saying they can't do it. I'm cynical. I'm a cynical person.
Yeah.
What I will believe, the evil that I know to me is in many cases worse than the evil that I don't know. And that's just the way I've kind of always felt.
Uh-huh.
And that's probably where a lot of my conservatism kind of comes from, is that I'm skeptical of people that get on stage and go, I figured it all out. Mm-hmm. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to make
it. How
do you
fucking know?
Yeah, well, it's also, how do you know? And then I look back throughout history and I say a lot of the greatest massacres and a lot of the greatest periods of where human rights have been suppressed have been trying to usher in a utopia of some sort, trying to make everything equitable, trying to make everything fair. That in many cases, in order to do that, the avenues to doing that, because if you believe that your end goal is a utopia, it's like, you know, paradise on earth, what you can do to get there what you can justify doing to get there
is fucked.
Is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
but wait, what are some examples of massacres that have occurred because you were that people were trying to reach a utopia?
Well, I mean, when people came to America and brought slaves.
Well, that's...
I mean, that
yeah.
They were like, we're going to build this land. The Europeans were like, we're going to kick everybody out who's already here.
I think if you just look at the spread of communism, if you look at the spread of communism and you look at the promises initially made, and a lot of the countries that adopted that as a policy, obviously Russia, China, Mao's revolution, the things that happened under Stalin, and a lot of people would argue that they weren't, no, that wasn't truly Marxism. It was some aberration. It was a version of Marxism. It was a dictatorship. It was whatever. No, I do believe that at the end of the day, a lot of, you know, a lot of that ideology taken to its extreme, by the way.
Well, yeah, I mean, Hitler was trying to also create what he thought it was a utopia.
Yeah, Hitler's another
every
example.
Utopia comes with a group being suppressed and being massacred.
You know, I was just curious to what specifically ones that you thought aligned with.
Those are, listen, I think any ideology taken to the extreme is a problem. And I think that what you're seeing right now, when you have conservatives drunk on their own power, a lot of those conservatives are drifting into ethno-nationalist fascism.
And what does that mean?
Basically, they are playing their own version of identity politics.
Ah, okay.
And they're saying that white people own America, that America is for white people. It was designed for them. It was built by them. And that these people are, they deserve some type of, you know, homeland, and they're being persecuted. And that gets very dangerous. And they say that that intelligence is determined by genetics, and that there are different races of people with different, you know, intellectual capabilities, and that then, you know, that's kind of a precursor to, you know, well, then why are those people around?
Let's get right. That's the extreme that it can
so
go to.
A lot of conservatives who've kind of been, they're truly you know, they're reticent to embrace identity politics for people. And even though the identity politics, again, I understand why that's happening. I don't condone it. I don't support it. I'm not a proponent of it. But I understand why it's happening, because if everybody's going to see every issue through the lens of identity, I'm gay, I'm black, I'm trans, I'm a woman, I'm this, I'm that, I'm Asian, white people are going to embrace that too, because that's what happens. That's what people do.
Right.
That's exactly what people do. So I understand why that's happening. I understand why if somebody's broke and in Ohio and they have no money and no job and all they hear about all day is their white privilege, they're going to radicalize, and they're going to unfortunately embrace some very dark
things. Like the white privilege thing means is like, yes, it doesn't mean that you, I was reading this something about this the other day, it's like white privilege doesn't mean that your life is going to be great just because you're white.
Right.
It means that you get to bypass these everyday instances.
Yeah, I think
that
as a concept,
like microaggressions.
As a concept, I agree with that. White people have had it a lot easier than any other minority in America. I think that is something that most intelligent people would agree with. But I do think there is a certain type of rhetoric that becomes, it degenerates, I think, rather quickly into name-calling. It's people that call each other names. They refuse to debate issues.
Right.
So if you're refusing to debate issues and just going, white privilege, white supremacy, no, debate the issue. You might be right, but if you cannot debate people, number one, all these people that say, oh, well, Milo Yiannopoulos says some abhorrent things, he shouldn't be at a college campus. It's like, well, if you're not going to debate him in public, how will you expose him as a fraud?
You can't just put a wall up in front of his face and pretend he's not there.
And if you think he's wrong and you're so convinced, and I would agree with you on many of the things that he talks about, he's crazy, debate him, prove him wrong, expose him as a fraud, and then, you know, that's what you kind of have to do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you send him to the nether regions of the internet, and he grows a following, and part of his appeal is that they won't let me speak, they won't let you hear these ideas, and then all of a sudden you're driven to him by people's refusal to listen to him.
Yeah.
So I agree with the idea that white people have had it a lot easier, but I think the rhetoric that gets built around that a lot of times degenerates, and it's not people having productive conversations about issues.
It's
people trying to isolate other people and go, well, you don't get to have an opinion because you're white.
And that's never going to work. That is never a valid argument. It will never help an argument, and it will only make people cling to their
beliefs. And people hearing this right
now
like, well, that's three white people talking.
Well, but, no, no,
you know,
no, no.
But I mean, but that's I did. That's the lens.
Well, this we're is, Jews, yeah. So we're not allowed in the alt-right's right. America anyway.
No, you're not. Listen, we've had meetings. correct. I'm glad you know.
I'm quite
some
clear
people
on
get
that.
Confused.
I'm quite
some
clear
people
on
get
that.
Confused. Pigment's not everything.
It's not. It's not.
But no, I mean that's the thing, man. And it's just like I just chill out. Just these conservatives, like, listen. Every day is like psychological terrorism, where you have like every day is like a new thing that they want to, you know, they want to do. And they, you know, you have this immigration, which is a complex issue, but at no point is it appropriate to cheer families getting separated or to make memes about it or to laugh about the kids in the detention centers. There is no humane way to do that.
Well, humanity has been stripped from all of these arguments.
Yeah, well, this is what happens. And I think this is, you know, unfortunate. And in comedy right now, I get...
Was complex issue your way of saying, like, yeah, I do want to build the wall, but out of recycled materials? Or
No, it's a complex
it's like
issue
organic.
Because, I mean, here's the deal. I don't think the wall is like this big symbolic thing. It's
so
never going to happen.
Stupid.
I mean, try to get your kitchen remodeled.
Yeah.
I mean, let's get ridiculous with the wall. But no, I think America should have immigrants come in. But at the end of the day, you have these extremes. You have these really, you have these people on one side that go, no borders, no nations. That's a view where they just go, and I'm like, well, you don't like the American government. You think we're corrupt. And now you're willing to say that whatever government will now govern the globe is going to be transparent and something that, you know, you agree with. So you need to have a border. You need to have security, and you need to have immigrants be able to come in and you know, all of those things need to happen. These are, it's to just say that like everyone should come. It's great, but you're personally not making any sacrifices for these people.
Right.
There are state and local services to help people. Those services, you know, those are the things that really teachers, police, firefighters in these towns and places, like the people that are going to be absorbing the influx of immigrants. You have to take into account how many people can assimilate into a culture and a financial system. And there are people here that don't have jobs. And like, that's a complex issue, but it doesn't help when a lot of that issue is framed on one side by people that just say, hey, no borders, no nations. We're going to, you know, and the other side of people that it's all based in racial resentment. And they're like, Mexicans don't work. And you have all these white people being like, Mexicans don't work. And you're like, what? Are you, what? I've never seen a Mexican person not working. I've never once legitimately seen a Mexican person not doing something productive and working their ass off.
I know.
And I saw a tweet today where somebody's like, I resent my ancestors being compared to the immigrants of today. My ancestors didn't show up to an industrialized nation for welfare benefits. And I'm like,
whoa.
If you are insinuating that the people that come from other countries don't work their fucking ass off, you are an idiot.
You
know what I mean? It's like,
People building up the world that they want to believe. They think that something is right through a lack of whatever they're fucking lacking personally.
Yeah.
And they just turn it outwards and they just make up shit.
Yeah. But also, here's the other thing. The problem with the internet is like all these opinions that I have right now, to many people, they'd be like, this seems reasonable. This seems rational. They don't get attention. That won't get attention. If I tweeted everything I just said like, hey, you need security, but you also need that. No one cares.
Yeah.
Nobody
cares. No one wants the middle ground fair one.
No audience for that.
It's not entertaining.
It's not entertaining. It's not, you know, burning a cross on someone's lawn. It's not, you know,
that's...
the Jews run the banks. It's not, you know, fuck white people. It's like none of that. That is what catches fire on the internet. Negative things spread so much faster than positive things online. You guys know that.
Yeah.
So that's the reality. That's why we're living in this fucking crazy world. So everybody's got to throw the phones out, shut it down.
I know.
But then why do you think people like Jordan Peterson, because everyone's up in arms about him, and then you know, we both went to see him speak, and like nothing he said was at all crazy, but then I'm sitting there in this group of like mostly white dudes, and then I was like, am I missing something? Jordan Peterson, he's a famous Canadian professor that a lot of feminists have issues with.
He's a clinical psychologist. He wrote a book.
Yeah.
You know, basically defending, I think the thing that he does that that bothers people is Peterson. He's this little skinny old man, very well spoken, very intelligent.
Yeah.
Talks a lot about personal responsibility. Talks a lot. I think he's defending. A lot of people view the West or the hierarchies, the patriarchy, any of that stuff, as these structures that are designed specifically to oppress people. And I think Peterson has said there's examples of these things in nature all over the place. Mm-hmm. Hierarchies are not necessarily oppression, although they can be.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily oppression. And a lot of them are based in some form of competence. People being better or smarter, faster or stronger than you, dominating you to some extent, because that's kind of the natural order of things.
Right.
So he's kind of defending that. And I think the people that want to create those utopias or that see the... You know, and some of them have a point where he talks about enforced monogamy. I think he uses words like that where he's simplifying a very complex argument. You have to really watch him speak for 2 or 3 hours. This is not a guy that Twitter, it's going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to really listen to him. And you could still have agreement. I have friends that have principled disagreements with him. Some of the things he said, I have said, well, I think he's saying that because he's more responding to the lunacy on the other side. This is the problem when everything's a binary. When everything's a binary and all knowledge is like weaponized, yeah, and you're in a war and the people against you are your enemy. Some of the things that Peterson says, I'm like, well, he's being willfully obtuse because he has to.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, he is, you know, none of this is happening on an island. He's fighting with people. As you said, he's in conflict with a lot of people. A lot of people don't think he should be able to speak. And, you know, so I think... And he rose to prominence with the transgender pronoun issue, where he refused to, he said, I don't want the government to be able to compel me to refer to somebody by the pronoun that they choose. I don't think compelled speech is a good idea. I think you head down a very slippery slope, mm-hmm, and it's a bad road. And a lot of people were like, well, you're anti-trans for that.
Well, how right. Was, yeah, was the government trying to compel him?
Well, there was
to...
a bill in Canada called...
Yeah, because he's Canadian. Yeah,
yeah. Well, there's, yeah, a bill, yeah, in Canada called C-16, I think, that would require you to refer to somebody, yeah, by their chosen pronoun, or you would face a fine. And then potentially, I guess, if you failed to pay that fine, you could,
what,
be jailed.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. But, and the thing is, like, he's like, there's never been an instance where I didn't call someone by their preferred, right, pronoun. He's just saying that I don't think it
don't
should...
Fine,
I should be,
me if I fuck up.
It should be legal that I have to. And I 100%, right, agree with that. Yeah. You can't start doing that.
I mean, again, was having a conversation, yeah, with somebody about somebody who goes by they, them, and we, right, kept saying she, and,
sure,
and then we're like, ah, shit. I mean, they, it's fucking, I mean, but, yeah, it wasn't out of malice.
So I think what Peterson was basically saying is when you start to compel people to say certain things, when that becomes, yeah, you know, the prerogative of the government, mm-hmm, it leads you down a dark road. And I think that there's a lot of historical examples of that. There are, you know, which he points to, which a lot of people don't like.
Like, and what? I mean, like what? Like what's a...
Well, I mean, in all of these countries, communist countries, things like that, you had not only laws that governed, you know, you had cultural laws, you know, Mao's Cultural Revolution, things like that. I mean, I think that, so if you're talking about, if you're resistant to the idea of government control, if that, and I think for Peterson, he's a guy that's very... You know, at his heart, he's, you know, a free market guy in the sense, mm-hmm, not free market in the sense that he doesn't believe that there should be a social safety net or whatever, but he believes that governments that are successful protect freedoms of their citizens and try to maximize freedoms of their citizens to engage in the kind of speech that some might find distasteful and abhorrent. Because at the end of the day, he believes that you have to trust, if all the ideas are out there, that people are going to make the right choice. Mm-hmm. You have to trust that. If you don't trust that, then you go down the other road where you give a certain group of people in society the responsibility to regulate speech based on what they consider offensive and hateful. And Peterson's point is that the people who would do the regulating are the people that you would least want doing it. Mm. You know, mm-hmm, those are the people who you necessarily would not want regulating speech. So I think at heart, he's somebody that is sees a lot of these things as the government infringing on personal freedom, and that is a slippery slope that won't, and that again, it's under the guise of compassion, and it's under the guise of, but what I think he sees that it has this rather pernicious effect of like, once you start limiting people's freedoms, you continue to do so. And I think that's what he's resistant to. So I think, yeah, that was the speech issue for him.
Yeah.
And then me and Corinne saw him. And again, listen, I think the guy's very smart. It's boring. Mm-hmm. It gets boring.
Well, also a lot of the stuff, like, yeah, so like people are so politically charged when they talk about him, but then if you just like listen and you forget who he is and actually just listen to the words that he's saying, everything he's saying is just the way I've mostly lived my life. Yeah. As far as like holding myself accountable, being productive, like there was nothing, because I was truly like on high alert for any crazy and I just wasn't hearing it. And I am continually confused as I watch him and read his work about like why people have such a problem with him.
If you believe that all dominance hierarchies are by nature oppression, if you believe capitalism is exclusively a predatory system, if you believe that, you know, globalization, the free market, all of those things have only served for people to further become oppressed and enslaved, and if you believe those things, you have, number one, to believe those things, you have to ignore tremendous amounts of data, tremendous amounts of facts, tremendous amounts of data that points to people being lifted out of poverty by the millions, by the way, over this period, through all over the world. But if you believe those things, then Peterson giving a articulate defense of the West is going to be, I mean, I've never seen the media try to destroy an individual more. I've never seen an individual misrepresented more than him. Hmm. I've never seen an individual where if you read an article about him and you listen to him speak, they are two completely different experiences. Huh. When you listen to his actual lectures that he gives, like Corinne said, you know, again, a lot of it is, you know, essentially is motivational speaking. He says things like, clean your room, you know, sort yourself out. Aww. And he's telling people to be responsible for themselves. I think one thing that he does that upsets some people, and I can understand that, is he says, before you go out and before you go protest, if you're an 18 or 19 year old college kid, make sure that you are sorted out. And I think people, and this is where he might be, he's not on as solid ground as he is in some of the other things. I understand his point. His point is that if you are not a fully functional, productive human being, who are you to tell anyone how to run the world at 18 or 19 years old? And on its face, that's a reasonable point. It's a rational point. But I do think there are certain instances where, you know, people feel that they need to do stuff. They need to act, you know, participate in activism. They need to show solidarity with people. That shouldn't necessarily be contingent on them being, you know, a perfect human being.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if everyone waited to protest until they had themselves sorted out, there'd be like five people at the protest.
So I think Peterson, that's an issue where his larger point, I think, is somewhat valid. I think we've all met people who are a fucking mess in their personal life, but can, you know, tell you how to live your life. I mean, just look at it on a personal level. Forget politics. We've all had a friend who's all over the place, but it's like, you got to break up. You got to do this. You don't know what you're doing. And it's like, I have a friend. I was in LA with a friend of mine who I love. And he was giving me all this advice. And his car door was broken. Like you had to.
It is hard to take advice from someone with a broken car.
The car door. And he's got money. He's fine. Oh. He's not genuinely. The car. He's choosing. He's got a beautiful home. He's smoking weed in the backyard. We're drinking orange juice that he just juiced with a juicer, which I'm sure was money that he could have spent fixing his car door. But you know what it is? It's the passenger side. Fuck the passenger. Yeah. That's where he's at. Yeah. He's like, doesn't affect me. I get in the driver's seat. You figure it out. These are little things that give an insight into somebody's mind where it's like, bro, fix your fucking door.
I
think that's kind of what Peterson's saying.
And people look to distractions before fixing themselves or figuring themselves out because that's scary and terrifying.
But I also understand that, like, listen, if the government goes and does some crazy things like they've been doing, people be able to people should mobilize. I mean, that's what it is. Listen, people should have mobilized when Obama fucking extended every Bush era program that limited your freedom, that fucking, like, you know, there's, you know, we have 20 intelligence agencies, we have a surveillance state, we have, you know, wiretapping, we have we have the NSA, we have all of these things that are doing things that infringe on your personal freedom. Mm-hmm. You should be mad at all of those things. They should bother you. They should upset you.
Yeah. It does seem like Republicans like to protest a little bit less than like liberals. It seems like we love protesting.
Yeah. Well, I think it's the types of people. I think conservatives, we go back to the beginning of the conversation, we talk about temperament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think conservatives, you know, Peterson made a great point where he's like, conservatives run companies, liberals start them. Mm-hmm. Liberals start companies because they innovate. They're all about, you know, You know,
well, I mean, we need both.
But then they don't think about like where the money's coming from.
Yeah, well, they also just their temperament is more suited to having ideas, you know, formulating ideas, looking at society and figuring out what we need. That's why we need both. You don't, you can't have a society without these two types of people. And then conservatives are kind of really good at, as Peterson would say, kind of running the algorithm, just doing what works over and over again and maximizing the results. But I think when the algorithm doesn't work, then, and he made this point, it's like that's when you need liberals. So I think conservatives, by their temperament, are more likely to embrace the parts of society that are functional and quote unquote run the algorithm. Mm-hmm. And I think liberals are people who are very good at looking at society and saying what doesn't work. My issue is then what are the solutions going to be? Conservatives and liberals, both bad at the
bad
solutions.
Bad solution makers.
Neither one of them is good. Neither one of them is good at solutions.
They should write for SNL.
I mean, they should do something. They should do something.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you dating? I'm curious what a date is like with you.
I'm dating Jordan Peterson, and I don't want to.
Oh, wow. What exclusive.
I know. It's going to be weird.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird, but I love that little, that frail
little body,
older man.
Yeah.
In Canada. No, I date. I have like, I don't know that it's like, you know, I have people that I see. We go out to dinner.
When's the last time you had a boyfriend, Tim? Stop beating around the bush.
I haven't had a boyfriend in forever.
What's the answer? Is this a complex issue?
I've never had. It's so nice because you look at both of them, you're like, who's the cunt? And then, you know, it's like, it's almost obvious. I've never had a boyfriend. You've never had a boyfriend? Never had a boyfriend.
You know what?
It's not worth 33. It. I've never had a boyfriend.
Have you tried?
I've never tried. Oh. That's the bad thing. I've always had guys that I've hooked up with and have had fun with and enjoyed spending time with.
You never had a desire to try?
I should try. I think now I'm starting to have more of a desire to try. But
is that why you're looking so good?
I don't know about that. Wouldn't you like to see her in a cage in a Mylar blanket?
Oh, I would love to be.
You know what
one.
I mean? Can you imagine the no outrage if she was in a cage? The zero marches that would happen?
Oh yeah, because she would love God. It.
But no, I've spent a lot of time on career shit, and then I also just like kind of have fun with people. Relationships are very sticky. But I realize it's a part of my life I need to
develop. I wish I could. I want to be there. I want to be in a place where I don't care about
dating
people.
No, it's unhealthy. This is very unhealthy.
I don't know.
I'm very unhealthy.
Really?
I think it's unhealthy.
Mentally, I don't. Are you?
I'm really focused on one area of my life at the expense of other areas of my life.
But it's going well.
It is. So that's why I don't. That's
but
why
do
I don't
you
reverse
feel fulfilled?
Course. No.
Oh, that's
ever
right.
No. But
yeah, but that's why you keep going. That's the hunger.
That's
that
kind of where maybe some of that hunger comes from.
But it's also like you don't. How do you know that a relationship would be the thing that made you feel fulfilled? You don't know that.
I don't know
it's
that.
It's an inkling. Yeah.
But I think that it's worth. I mean, there are guys that I've liked and I've thought about, you know, and I. But
mm-hmm. Have you ever felt like you were in love with somebody?
Yes, probably, but it just never went to the next level.
Why not?
I think I'm afraid that once I fall in love with somebody, I'll stop doing everything else.
Yeah, that's like might be
really,
true though.
I really fear, and this is very unhealthy, but I fear that if I was in love with somebody, I don't know how that would impact other areas of my life.
But are you happy now, or are you just keep doing this comedy thing because it's working and it's what you feel you should be doing?
I'm happy. I mean, it makes me happy. I mean, if I want it, like if there is a happiness there, and I do believe like you have to make sacrifices, like I don't know that it would be fair to be in a relationship with somebody who I would literally be like, you're never going to come first. I'd have to be honest.
Yeah.
You're legitimately never going to come first.
Mm.
A C-level road club in Cleveland is going to come first.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because,
but I get that.
Because right now that's what has to happen.
I think you're smart though, because crushes, all they do is just distract you from all the shit you need to do.
I mean, I have crushes on people and I'm dating, whatever the fuck it is.
But
I think I have these like arrangements where like, you know, I'll hang out with somebody, we'll you know, go to a hotel, we'll have dinner, we'll fuck around, but there's no
and
like-
And you know, desire to
not
like-
Not many of them are married.
Are you
know,
a top?
I don't want to get involved. I can do both.
Oh, really?
I can do both.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Huh. You know?
Wait, they're married?
No, I'm kidding. One has a girlfriend. One right now has a girlfriend, which is weird.
Do you have sex with a lot of people who like say that they're straight?
Maybe. Like, I don't know who they're, I don't know what they're in their lives. I don't know what they do. Like, I don't
know. You really don't talk much.
No,
John.
We do talk, but here's the thing.
This is so bathhouse.
It gets kind of weird only because I don't know. Like, so there's this guy that I met recently, and I went out to dinner with him, and he's like, he seems kind of gay. He seemed gay.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and then later I found out he's gay. And then, but he's very much like, I'm like, does anyone know you're gay? He's like, no. I'm like, your friends don't know? And he's like, no. And I'm like, your family doesn't know? And I'm looking at him and I'm going, this is kind of not a shock. But then I see on Instagram, like, he's got a girlfriend and she's really attractive and she loves him. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, because he's non-threatening, probably super fun to hang out with.
I want to show you the photos of him. We're not on screen.
All the closeted gay guys I've known have had hot as fuck girlfriends.
There's nothing hotter than a closeted gay guy. Everyone's like, oh, gay pride. I'm like, that's fine. To me, sex and pride, nothing's less sexy than pride, being proud of something. And I don't mean you shouldn't. Let's be honest. I'm not proud of the things I like sexually. I don't sit down at dinner with my family. I'm proud of my the Netflix thing I did. I'm not proud of sitting around and being like, eating ass. That's what I'm about. Like, I'm not proud of that.
But a lot of people are.
But being proud of eating ass would make it not as fun.
Right. I don't want ass eating to be a mainstream thing. I want it to be like, it's a dirty,
naughty
thing that I'm ashamed of. And that's hot to me.
Well, a lot of my problems with non-monogamy and threesomes. I think part of the reason I hate them is because everyone's doing them now. And I'm like, ugh, hack. Next thing, cut someone open, lick it.
Right. Right. Well, that's good. Next thing, murder.
Yeah. I didn't say, I said cut someone open and lick it. I didn't say murder.
I mean, so here's the Instagram. And I mean, I want you to look at the whole Instagram, but here's the photo where it's kind of like, this is the girl, and she's very attractive, but it's like, you're gay.
What? She's scratching her face in this picture.
She's covering her face because she doesn't want anybody to know.
Now, here's the other thing. Do I feel bad that, like, I'm like face fucking him in a hotel, and
well, I mean, that's pretty gay.
That I paid for.
That's pretty gay.
Like, I mean, is that a guy that you think is gay when you look at him?
100%, he has gay face.
He's gay.
Is
that acceptable to say? I don't care. It's true. Gay face.
But it's kind of like
easily.
He's dating a girl. Does the girl know that me and him are face fucking decent but not great midtown hotel that doesn't even have room service? They don't even have room
service.
See,
I wouldn't have thought he was gay. I thought he was metro.
No, I mean, this
picture.
He's
kind of metro, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Should I feel bad about that? It's not.
My
mic, sorry.
But it's not.
Back.
But why? So, I mean, so it's not really. You're not in the relationship he is. So, I mean.
So here's the thing. When you ask me, do you have relationships, Tim? Yes. But here's the deal.
Oh, my God.
They have relationships, but I... What?
He made a Britney Spears reference in one of his captions, Tim.
All right. Well, let's not get too specific. You have a large platform.
Well, those two things is enough.
But so my whole thing is
Is he listening to this? I hope
not. No, I don't think so. But it's also like, who knows? But it's also like, at the end of the day, this fucking chick might be. So who knows?
Oh, yeah.
Well, if she couldn't tell from reading the caption herself
now,
on the Instagram, then she does need to hear it on a podcast.
Do you think she's okay with it? Do you think she's cool with
it? She doesn't know.
No, she doesn't know.
She doesn't know.
You don't think she knows?
If she has any inkling, she's stuffed that so far down in the depths of the fucking earth.
Wow. This is crazy.
We do get a lot of emails like, is my boyfriend gay? Or I think my boyfriend's gay. Or I found this. Is this gay? We get a ton of emails.
Can you forward them to me? I think it's very important that I do a full investigation.
Yeah, you need to email him back ASAP.
Yeah, let me see if they like bro stuff. Like, I'm really into bro-y, like, you know, like let's, you know.
But like, I'm like boy crazy. I get very boy crazy. Yeah. And that's so fucking distracting. So the relationship you have aren't distracting.
No, they're very, they're very much a means to an end. But I think what Corinne is basically saying, what I probably do have, like a little what Corinne has inside of her, which is the need to control someone, to dominate them, to impose her will.
I was
on
waiting
them.
For what that was going to be, because I was like, you know, everyone reads me so well on this podcast.
Well, no,
I just tune in every week to hear how I am.
You're in a relationship. You're a participant. You know what I mean? Probably.
Oh yeah.
You're in it.
Yeah.
In it.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm participating.
Hardcore in it.
You know what I mean? Like you're. It's a, you know. So like, there's part of me that wants to be in a relationship and do the like, come meet my parents and do the like come with me to record if I'm taping a special, or come with me to do something and be more involved in my life and not just be this kind of tangential part of my life. So I do totally understand And, you know, to just have that emotional nourishment that I kind of don't have. I just have like these transactional things with
right.
people.
But do you feel lonely ever?
No.
That's great.
That's the thing. And I don't feel lonely, but I also don't feel completely like whole. I don't know what that feels like.
But I also think it's easier for you not to feel lonely having never had a boyfriend. You don't even know what you're missing. It's almost
I don't know what I'm missing.
It's almost a better case scenario.
I've had girlfriends.
When?
When I was in high school and shit. I had girlfriends. I dated girls. But I mean, it was like,
were they really hot?
No, they were not bad looking. They were kind of curvy, but they weren't bad looking at all.
Yeah.
You know, these were.
But like, what was that like for you? Because I mean, you already knew you were gay at that point. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a wet hole. You make the mess of it. You know,
you close your eyes and you go to town.
You go to dinner.
So wait, okay. So this is the last of our Pride series. And I love having you on. But no, this is why I love having you on, because you are so like non-traditionally homosexual.
Yeah, I
love it.
I'm just sucking dick, having fun.
Yeah.
Just relaxing.
But nice. So like, what's going on in your head during like June Pride Month in New York City? Do you participate in any way? Or
I mean, I think I participate in the way that a lot of gay people participate. I live a
sucking
life.
Dicks?
I suck a dick. I fucking record a podcast. I do comedy every night. I never hide from who I am. Like, I'm not a guy that like, I don't always mention it on stage, but I usually do. There's usually a joke about it because I feel like a hack if I don't have one. But then I also feel like a hack if I'm like putting it in when it doesn't belong. I'm yelling about something else. I'm like, I'm also gay. And it's like, no, I don't feel the need to conform to any particular version of what gay is. I think there's a lot of people that haven't come out of the closet because they feel a lot of pressure to be a certain thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with pride. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that, you know, the particular iteration of expressing your sexuality is great. And I understand where it comes from and why it's necessary. But I think there's a lot of people out there that don't necessarily fit into that mold. Mm-hmm. And I think if the media and people like that, if the image of what gay is evolves and changes and becomes quote unquote, more somewhat mainstream, you start seeing sports people come out of the closet. There are other communities of gay men out there that I feel like will come out of the closet and should come out of the closet. And, I don't think I'm so different. Like, I know that in the comedy business I am, I think, because there's not a ton of gay guys like me but I think in the world you find that a lot of gay people are going to work, raising kids, having dinner. It's not a
just doing everything else everyone else is
doing. The whole Pride Month feels weird. It feels like this large corporate thing.
Oh, it did feel very corporate this year. Like I walked through Herald Square this year and every store had a sign. And I was like, oh, of course you only fucking care now because it's profitable. Because it's now like you feel like if it was not on the profitable side of the spectrum, like no one would have a rainbow flag up.
It just
so
feels
irritating.
Like, man, I just have a resistance to like
everyone has a t-shirt.
Massive parties. I love New Orleans. It's one of my favorite cities. I would never go during Mardi Gras.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
It's not for me.
You don't even need to, though. It's a party all the time there.
Absolutely, 100%. Like, to me, it's like any massive display of debauchery isn't necessarily as fun. I mean, I'm 33 years old. I'm kind of a loser, I think. Like, I'm kind of like, I love comedy. I love making people. I think my job's very exciting. But, like, when people are like, what do you like to do? I'm like, I like to hang out. I like to walk around new places. I like to go out to dinner with people.
That's like a loser, though.
It's not a loser, but you know what I mean? It's like this idea
of, like,
you're
not a rager.
Yeah, this crazy. Yeah, but why? Because I was. It gets old.
But I think you would be more of a loser if you were still raging every night at 33.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, I think that like there's a time in your life to just kind of focus on something and whatever that is, whatever you want it to be. But I mean, there's a lot of Pride's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of fun. It's just like I've gone to Pride events and things like that. I'm just not the guy on the float.
Yeah,
you know.
But that's not where you're at in life. And I feel some kid who was fucking kept his own identity to himself his whole life, and then moves to New York City is gonna. That's Pride is probably like the best day ever.
Yeah,
that's great.
It's amazing. And you know what I mean?
But like, say they do try to take away marriage equality, gay marriage. I mean, is that something? Do you get out? Do you march then?
Yeah, I mean, I do whatever I have to do. Listen, I have a platform. I will march. I will do those things. But I think I'm more effective as somebody that can go and make really good arguments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really believe that's how I'm the most effective. I will march. I have no problem with marching. I have no problem with doing any of that. And the gay rights movement was not the real work of it was done by people that were older than me. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, you know? The people at Stonewall Inn getting the shit beat out of them.
The Marsha P. Johnsons, yeah.
All of those people did the work that's unimaginable. They were dying alone, their families, their country, their government. Yeah. Everybody had turned their back on them. They were still doing this work and demanding their humanity.
Yeah.
And those people, and they're still around, and I'm not saying that has gone away, but I'm in awe of those people. I would never claim to have been one of those people. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I would never claim that mantle. That's something that's truly amazing. And I think that at the end of the day, it's like, I don't have that story. Most gay people I know don't have that story. Hey, if you work for BuzzFeed and you're gay, guess what? You don't have that story. I don't care what article you wrote.
Yeah.
I don't care what joke offended you that you decided to, you know, dedicate fucking 2,000 words to. No, the people that are doing it, the activists, the real activists, the people that did not take very lucrative careers in the private sector and instead, you know, maybe still were in the private sector, but like defended gay people, tried to advance, you know, the cause of marriage equality. People that do things like that are amazing. I will help in whatever capacity that I can help in, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is, to be honest with you, I think, and I hate to sound like, this is going to sound like, you know, somewhat, I think people seeing gay guys like me, talking to gay guys like me, having somebody like me being like, is a part of who I am. It's not the central part of who I am. It's not. I don't think anyone's sexuality is the central part of who they are. If you are, you're not interesting. Right. I think there's a lot of people out there that aren't interesting. So unfortunately, whatever they have,
and I think people who make their sexuality the central part of who they are people who are desperately trying to seem interesting.
Right. I think the craziest form of activism, and I'm not taking away anything from people that are fighting the marriage fight, all of that. I think that's all very important. So I want to be careful about the way that I say this, but like, I think it is a valid form of activism to be a gay person who lives a good life.
Yeah.
And does it conform to a specific stereotype and goes out into the world and lives a good life and has people, meets people, treats them with respect.
Yeah.
And basically enlarges the picture of what gay is. That's a huge
and
part of it.
And expanding people's ideas beyond
and
some
not
stereotype.
Even doing it, you know, cynically or like, you know, me suggesting that people have to do that because fuck what people think about you. Who cares? But the idea of like just going out there and living a good life and like proving all of those people wrong that think you are just a sex obsessed cretin or you're a pedophile, you're a fucking, you know, you hang out in underground dungeons or whatever, you know, whatever people think about gay people, you know, show them that you're not. You're a teacher, you're a coach, you're a firefighter, you're a cop, you're a fucking whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. I would never do any of those jobs, they're boring, but like you know what I mean, like not everyone's meant to be famous,
right?
Like I am, but the point is that all of the regular gay people need to do regular gay things.
Yes. Or just regular things. I mean, but so do you ever catch flack from the gay community for having conservative views?
I think some of my conservative views are for people to really, for me to get flack, they'd have to make an argument. So, I mean, I don't have the kind of conservative views that are, I think, like the type of conservative views that are headlines where mm-hmm. it's like, I don't go out and say like Mila Yiannopoulos and I hate to use him as an example, but like he'll say ridiculous. He'll be like, gays are lazy. Don't hire them.
Right.
And it's like, okay, well that's a view that you're clearly going against. You're clearly saying an inflammatory thing, but like, yeah, I get flack from not only the gay community, I get flack from every community when I say that, I believe that, Western civilization has, some values that make a lot of sense and that capitalism is not the greatest evil that the world has ever known and that, free speech is important. I mean, these are all debates I never thought I'd be having.
Well, I know.
With liberal comedians. I never thought I'd be debating the merits and values of free speech. I never thought, but yeah, I catch flack when I say Roseanne has the right to have a TV show. Not after what she said, but like the idea that just having a Trump supporter on TV.
Oh, I absolutely agree. We're just talking about
I get flack for that. I get flack. But do I get specifically flack from the gay community? I don't know. Okay. I think sometimes I do, but I don't think it's like, one of the things that I think prevents me from getting flack, I don't give a fuck about flack. I'm not trying to be in the club. So if you're not trying to be in the club, you can't get kicked out of what you're not in.
True.
I'm trying to be my own thing and trying to entertain people, but I've never gone along with anything that I found to be not what I authentically feel. Mm-hmm. It's the people that do that all the time that then when they are caught, they get a lot of flack because it's like you've strayed from the fucking herd. Like you're, and yeah. and that I've never been with the herd.
Yeah. So, well, those are like the types of people who like Google what opinion to have every morning.
And there's a lot of people in this business with the right opinion in the right package that go very far. I've never tried to be one of those people. I've only ever tried to be funny.
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, I think, you know, I'm sure I'll get flack, but it's like, the flack's only as much as you care what the flack is.
Yeah, that's true.
I know, but
yeah.
I know there have been times that I've known you during your career where you've like toned things down.
Well, here's what happened.
To be more palatable.
What I realized, I don't know if it's to be more palatable, but I realized something, and I think it was an important thing. I realized I wasn't being funny. So that became a huge problem.
Like you were just being angry or?
I was just engaging in debates with people that were irrelevant.
Okay.
They weren't relevant. My skill is not debating people. I'm smart. I can craft a good argument, but that's not what I came here to do.
Yeah.
It's not why I moved from Long Island and lived in a shitty apartment and had rats and roaches and bed bugs and worked a job I hated 8 or 10 hours a day. I don't run from any of my views. I'll discuss them at length with anyone who will have me, as you can see. That being said, I don't believe that, you know, you start to really drain your energy. You only have a certain amount of energy.
Yeah.
And if you're fighting with people all day and you pick every argument, you pick every fight. Now I'll write things when I truly believe something. I'll write it and I'll craft something. I'll put it out there. But yeah, I mean, there have been times when I've decided to kind of tone things down because at the end of the day, I'm like, I'm not centering funny. Mm-hmm. I'm not putting funny out first.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. So that became a major issue. And like, and I'm also draining my energy talking and debating with people, and this doesn't matter.
Yeah. And was it solely your choice, or did any like agents or managers?
I'm not a celeb. They don't care.
I don't know because I mean, I think it's like, you know, pretty early on in a career, people do try to
help you figure
out who you are. You have an agent now.
No, I've never had an agent or manager say anything about anything that I've said.
Just curious.
No, because I think there's a market for the Yahoo. Mm-hmm. There's a market for the guy that's nuts.
Yeah.
Millionopolis makes more money than most comedians.
Yeah.
There's a market there. I don't know that... I'm not the guy that's, I don't have big deals with Disney or something. You know what I mean? Like I'm a comedian. I live in that world. If I do a show, it'll probably be in a comedy space, you know, or maybe a dramatic space with that's funny. I don't think that I'm not a Disney Channel star. I'm not somebody who is
But you did take dance classes.
I did take dance classes.
I saw those belly shirts.
I was very good.
You look like a Disney Channel.
Me
you look
and
like
a looked alike as children. And
what?
You know, did you take dance?
Yeah, but I didn't look like you. I don't even know.
Well,
and,
let's.
And
honey,
you were kind of hot.
Let's put the photos up and let's see. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I wish I was at a part where like they bring me in a room and they're like, tone it down, Dylan. Mm-hmm. Tone it down. But it's really more like they're like, don't miss your flight to Cleveland.
Yeah, yeah. Be at the airport by nine.
Yeah, and I also think at the end of the day, it's like you get to a point. I talked to James about this because I think James is great and I think he's really funny. But I think it's also that like I'll tell him, I'm like, you start hitting your head against a wall enough times with people where you go, this isn't working. All we're feeding is the beast.
Mm-hmm,
All you're feeding is Twitter. Facebook.
Those are the only things that are really. I used to love nothing more than when you would sit down and talk to James because I feel like I would get through to him, but I feel like it was like sending him to like a
therapist.
Like, go talk to your dad.
Because here's the thing. It's like you can have these 300 comment threads with people,
right?
And then you wake up the next day and you're like, I didn't write a pilot.
Yeah.
I didn't write a new bit.
Oh, I would tell him that all the time. I'm like, what are you
doing? And it's just hard because that's where I would get to, where I would be like arguing with people, and then I'm like, I'm arguing with people. I don't even know who these people are. These are people that do open mics in Colorado.
Yeah.
That I'm arguing
and
with.
I would literally click on people on that he was arguing with on the feed and like take a 1 second glance at their Facebook and be like, what are you doing?
Yeah, so to
You're
me
too
it's
talented
like,
to do this.
Yeah, for a while there, I kind of liked being trolly.
Yeah.
Because it was kind of fun.
Oh, sure, it's an activity.
And when you're a wordsmith such as yourself, it's fun.
I think eventually I just got to a point where I'm like, I really want to make things.
Yeah.
And I want to do stuff that I'm kind of proud of. And I could look at people and go, this is funny, this is good.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, it's just kind of like, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens. But, you know, if I feel strongly, when the Louis thing happened, I felt very strongly. I wrote a thing. It kind of got shared a lot in the comedy community.
Wait, what was your stance? I'm sure I read it at the time.
Well, it was that the behavior was deplorable, but people are using this as a way to say that he wasn't funny or that his comedy was inappropriate.
Which is irrelevant.
And what you're basically trying to do is you're trying to redefine what's funny so that you as a mediocre talent can compete.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that seemed very cynical to me. And the people that were doing it were the usual suspects or people that work in comedy. Many of them are comedy writers. They have jobs. They make a lot of money. They don't take any risks. They hit a target when it's acceptable, which was when all that information came out. Very few people were going at Louis before that information came out. There were a few, and good for them or whatever. You know, like at the end of the day, I respect that. I don't respect the pylon of all these people that now that it's a safe target to hit, they all go hit him. And I'm like, these are the people in comedy that'll never be unemployed and they'll never be great.
Yeah.
Because that's they're careerists. Their main instinct is self-preservation. And these are the people that are hopping on these things. And again, the right opinions in the right package at the right time, you can advance your career, but you'll never be great. That is not
the
recipe for if you really truly want to get, and I'm not even talking about great in any commercial sense. I'm talking about really truly being happy with what you're doing on fucking stage and on any platform. Mm-hmm. The road to that is not just fucking, you know, becoming a fucking cubicle dwelling fucking, you know, and I don't even mean there's anything wrong with sitting in a cubicle or having a writing job, but like that mentality of being a fucking worker and going in and sitting there and like staying within the lines and all that shit. I didn't get into comedy to be that person.
No.
And to me, it defeats the whole purpose.
But even for like, I wouldn't even go as far to say that actions were deplorable. I would just say like gross, especially because, I mean.
Sure. I mean, I don't know what the word I used.
No,
I think
I'm just curious, but it's like my only thing is that I know we've talked about this before, but it's like, so if you're being so open as a comedian on stage about your actions, both the good and the bad and things you're embarrassed about, like why did he just not talk about it?
Well, I mean, I think that was a mistake. I think he knew it was wrong, and I think he's probably ashamed of it. And I think there's things that is as honest and open as any of us are. There are things that we hide from the audience. There are things that we keep to ourselves. And I think that probably he knew it was wrong. And I think the actions were really inappropriate. There are people in your workplace that deserve a level of respect. You're not giving them that level of respect.
Yeah.
You're in a position of power. It's uncomfortable. It's wrong. And I think that like nobody was defending the actions that I saw. Most people were saying, this isn't the right way to go about it.
Yeah.
But what I took issue with was the people that were saying, burn the Comedy Cellar down. And this is the culprit here is offensive comedy. And I'm like, well, no, it's not, because a lot of people made this point. I'm not the first one to make it. But like, you know who had really inoffensive comedy? Bill Cosby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to me, whenever you go at comedy, that I always kind of just feel like it's a fucking scapegoat, and you're doing it cynically because you yourself
can't be great.
Want to advance your own career without doing the hard work and without fucking taking real risks, which these people don't want to take because they went to great schools and they live in nice apartments in Manhattan or LA. And those aren't the people that take risks. Those aren't the fucking revolutionaries. Yeah. I don't give a fuck what you're doing on Twitter. You're not a fucking revolutionary. You don't know how to be broke. You don't know how to be poor. You don't know how to be unliked. You don't know how to be not liked. None of that is what you know how to do. You know, I'm just speaking to like specific people. You know how, but you know how to
just insert names.
You know how to show up at an office every day and fucking punch a time card. That's what you do. Don't fucking come at people that are fucking actually trying to do good shit and fucking yell at us.
Yeah, but I mean, talking about safety, I know we were talking about it before we started recording, but the Nanette special, I would love to talk about it because.
Would you love?
Yeah, because, well, so what's her name? Hannah Gadsby is her name.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because I heard about it through the comedy community, so immediately watched it because I fucking love shit like that. And I mean, I went in it wanting to make fun of it, and I wasn't even nearly as annoyed by her as I thought I would be. But then like immediately after, when it started being popularized by like the Huffington Post article, etc., I got a slew of DMs from listeners of this podcast who were like, have you watched this special? I think you would love it. And I got a mix of emotions, anger, confusion. It's like, and I often feel that it's like how much I don't understand.
Listen,
I don't understand why people think I would like that. It wasn't comedy, first of all.
Yeah, well, that's the main problem, and I haven't seen it, so you know.
The main problem isn't the special. I don't have an issue with the special. I don't like the special. I don't like a lot of specials. A lot of comedy to me isn't funny. Where it goes on Netflix is not nearly as important to me as other people like, don't put it under the comedy
banner.
But
it is, because people who aren't comedians then think that's what comedy is supposed to be, and that's why we have audiences who show up and think it's
offended.
Okay to cry in the middle of a fucking comedy show. And it's
not. I don't know if people are that stupid.
No, they are.
Potentially. You could be right. here's where the problem lies. It's not so much in the actual special, it's the response to it, okay? It's this idea that it's being heralded as this, you know, as all these people that they're, you know, these media types that write about comedy. There's so many people writing about comedy now, you know? You'd think with everything going on, there'd be other things to write about.
For sure.
But
but I think it is important, though, because it's the one place where free speech is hopefully still living a little bit.
I understand, and I understand that these people are culture writers and whatever title they give themselves.
What even is that?
But at the end of the day, it's like, when that Huffington Post article came out, I had no issue with her, and I had no issue with the special. I didn't find it funny. In fact, I found it whenever people do something like that, they give glimpses into their mindset without even realizing it. And a lot of these people exist in this very interesting place of wanting to define themselves entirely by their pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they define themselves. It's very interesting. Mm. And they believe that the way they've experienced the world is the only way to experience it.
Mm.
And they want to kind of impose that worldview and that perspective on other people. They're imposing their will on you. And it's people that really seek control. They really want control. They don't want people to believe things that they don't believe. They don't want people to, and you can feel it. You can feel the moments of tension in that special. It's almost like, are you guys with me yet?
Yeah.
Are you here? And to me, I've always ever wanted to just entertain people. I don't need to have everyone believe things I believe. I don't need everyone to... I don't want people to murder me. I want rights.
Like, why? I don't understand how big your ego has to be to invite everyone to a theater to then announce for an hour in what you presented under the guise of a comedy special that you are actually not doing comedy anymore. Like, why do we need to talk about that for an hour? Number one, it's a one-woman show. It's not a comedy special.
Yeah.
And so it is annoying to put that. And as far as, like, people are so concerned about, like, offensive comedy these days, it's like nothing is more offensive than fucking lying to someone and saying, I'm going to give you comedy. And then, like, not giving them comedy.
Well, people are genuinely, a lot of these people, and we're all narcissists to an extent. I mean, to invite anyone to a theater and go, here's what I have to say, is an ego.
Oh, hell yeah.
Right, because I mean, I did find her kind of charming at points.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think what upset me was the Huffington Post article where she said, this is the thing that got me.
Right.
Her quote was, if you're just trying to be funny, get the hell off national television. Which, by the way, who the fuck's on national television? Number two.
And I disagree with that because in my saddest times, like fucking what made me laugh the most and what made me get out of my own head the most. And it's 100% in Practical Jokers, which is the humor of a 12-year-old boy.
Right. No, it really comes from this deeper place of her being unable to exist in a world where people are perceiving it in different ways than she is.
Mm.
That humor means different things to different people. She can't live with that. It's not okay with her.
Well, to say that a comedian's job is not to be funny is just the antithesis of a comedian's job.
Well, because to her, it's not. To her, it's not. It's not.
And look, I know what you mean. It's just funny the way you said it.
But I mean, that's what it is. It's kind of like with somebody like her, they believe that any art, I mean, she's talking about Pablo Picasso and Van Gogh and like. Yeah.
Well, that's because I mean, in her defense, she does have a degree in art history. So, I mean, that's why.
As all the funniest comics do.
I mean,
get it.
Agreed, but that's why she brought that into the, you have to talk about what you know.
But it's also like, listen, she wants to destroy, I think the idea, she really loves the idea of marrying art to the morality of the person who created it.
Mm.
And I think that
those are separate.
And that's what she's, you know.
Well, I mean, there is one point in the special when she announces, she's like, when I started this, can you guess who my favorite comedian was? And then she takes a dramatic pause and she's like, Bill Cosby. And like, even the audience doesn't react because no one cares.
Yeah. No. But I think part of this is, listen, here's the deal. I think we all want to compete. I think people are hardwired to compete. Even the people that extol the virtues of, like, you know, collectivism and all this stuff, at the end of the day, they still like to be at the top of the hierarchy. They like to climb a ladder. Most people do. Not everyone, but a lot of people do. And I think people are very good at spotting ways, because it's hardwired into us, this idea of like spotting the avenue. What's the avenue? How do I get there?
Yeah.
How am I going to get there? What do I have to do in order to get there? What is the process going to be? Is it going to be this? You look at things, you go, I can't do that. There's guys that try to get laid and women try to get laid, whatever. I don't want to gender everyone, but you have guys that go, yeah, I'm not going to be the best looking guy. That's never going to be me.
Yeah.
I got to develop a personality. Some people go, I got to be rich. Some people go, I got to be this. There's avenues to kind of get what you want. I think a lot of these people that want a divorce, that really want to, you know, basically throw out all the art that was created from people who are considered by our standards, maybe by any standards, to be immoral and to be degenerates for whatever reason. I think part of the reason they want to do that is, whether consciously or not, if you get rid of all that art, then they're the only ones left. Mm. So if you get rid of Louis, Nanette, you know, like if you get rid of...
But I'm thinking, like, yeah, it's like, who has a history that is so squeaky clean that we cannot in it find something that we can, that we,
nobody,
can categorize as deplorable?
Right.
And then also she goes on. So, oh my God, I have so much. So I just haven't ran into anyone who's seen this special yet. So I'm so excited about it. But like she...
I watched 3 minutes.
She fucking then goes into that. She hates Pablo Picasso because she's like, he had sex with an underage girl. And then we find out she's 17 no one cares.
No one cares.
Like 17. Oh. I'm sorry.
It was a long time
Why
ago.
Did she bring that
you
up?
You can fuck someone who's seven. God, I mean, like, legally you can't, listeners, but like,
well, some states you can.
I mean, I know a lot of the states.
Tim
has visited all of them.
This is not, I just don't think that's a reason to stop. And obviously there's abuse, and there's, you know, if when someone's in their 40s, they know a lot more than someone who's 17. It's not healthy.
Let's say Pablo Picasso. Let's say he was a murderer.
Yeah.
And a rapist.
Right.
And a pedophile. And let's give
all
let's
the
say,
things. Give
let's
him
say
all
of the things.
Yeah.
Let's say he was the worst of the worst.
Cornucopia, yeah.
If you look at the stuff he did, are you still not going to say, fuck?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck.
Broadly has
Is
this...
that a fucking crazy painting? Like,
yeah.
I don't know what to say. Like, how are you not going to have that reaction?
And that's broadly has the feminist leg of Vice has this section.
I read it every day.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you just jerk off to it.
Yeah,
the words
every day.
They have this type. They have this like column, I guess, that's recurring. That's like, you know, so and so was actually a piece of shit, and they're like, Mother Teresa was a cunt, and then they would say something like, and
broadly ruins everything.
Yeah,
that's the-
yeah, basically. Well, we try to do a segment on it for a live show for something, because I'm just like, can you not take the shitty part of it, like the cunty reactions Mother Teresa's had?
Yeah.
And you're taking them and you're parading them as this is who she really is. It's like, we're all fucking complex and we all have fucked up shit. We all have great shit.
It doesn't mean that people should get away with their shit, but it also means that, like, here's the deal. Talent does not come from healthy, happy people.
It's true.
It doesn't.
I mean, it has sometimes, but
no,
it's rare.
I mean, maybe. Rare. Yeah, sure. It's rare. I think talent comes from turmoil.
Yeah.
Inner turmoil.
Angst.
I think, like, when people complain about Roseanne, it's like, shouldn't a character have conflict? Shouldn't there be demons there? Shouldn't people, don't you want to see art where people wrestle with their misogyny, homophobia, their racism? Don't you want to see those things? Because that's what people are doing in their private lives.
Yeah.
Art is a art's a mirror of your private life. We're not driving the conversation. I know that people think we are. We're reflecting what's going on.
Yeah.
So even the best movies about whether
you're just holding a mirror up to society.
That's what it is. And I think a lot of people now are convinced that they're actually driving the entire thing, that they're the ones that are, you know, basically in charge of, you know, pushing civilization forward. And they believe this while telling jokes in a basement on McDougal Street. And I don't mean the cellar, I just mean anywhere, like,
right.
You know, I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. You're a lounge act. I tell people all the time I'm a lounge act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I tell jokes to drunk people in lounges. If you need me to register you to vote, then let's just call society.
Yeah.
Let's call it a
problem.
Day.
It's
let's
problem.
Call it a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, because Hannah was, one of her last points is like, my pain cannot be a punchline anymore.
Oh, yeah. We did this on your favorite podcast, Legion of Skanks. We did, it was actually really funny. She was like, I am, a 17-year-old is never in their prime.
Right.
I am in my prime. There is nothing. There is nothing stronger than a woman who has rebuilt herself. And the Legion of Skanks had a laugh track. We just kept pressing like the laugh track. Like,
it was her Braveheart
just
moment.
Explosive laugh. Listen, man, if I saw a show like that, a one-woman show like that, I probably would have been like, this is fucking great.
Yeah. Oh, no,
this
as a one-woman
great.
Show, it would have been
it
good.
It seems as though that's
this
the main problem
great.
Of it.
Yeah.
But and also a one-woman show is saying like, hey, I'm a narcissist and you're going to all sit and talk about me and just me. And I'm not even going to, maybe you'll laugh, maybe you won't for an hour and a half. And that's fine. That's exactly what a one-woman show, I've done a one-woman show. And I was like, let's talk about me for an hour.
Yeah.
And it's great, but you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you're not trying to mask something and like then feed people fucking propaganda through the title of comedy.
Yeah, but I think it's very easy Comedy is one of the things about comedy that makes it so cool is that there is no barrier to entry. You don't have to go to a school. You don't have to go to Juilliard. It's not like a discipline like you'd play music. It's kind of it's the Wild West. It has a lot more that in comparison with a circus than it does with like any type of formal art.
That's why no one respects it.
Well, yeah, but I think there's a beauty. There's a beauty in that. It's kind of this fucking renegade art form that's kind of relegated to basements and shitty, you know, comedy clubs and stuff like that. So I think that when we try to dress it up and we try to make it academic, and I think that's kind of what that special kind of felt like when we and I'm not saying that you can't elevate it. I think you should elevate it in any way that you can. But at its very core, I think the essence of what it is should be this dirty, somewhat deranged thing that like allows humanity to blow off steam so that we can all be better people. And I don't think you're going to solve all the problems in the world through comedy. And I think trying to is a really big mistake because you're going to, you know, again, people get mad at racial jokes. It's like, you know, racial jokes have probably brought more people together then they have divided people, you know, because humor is ridiculous.
But it's also access to the regular person because it's like, you know, there might, I'm sure there exists many wonderful TED Talks and high level texts on race and race relations, but like that's not the words or the conversation that's getting into the ears of the regular person who comes home from their job and wants to have a beer and goes to a comedy club. Like it's direct access to real everyday people.
Yeah. Do you think the guy that I'm fucking has this conversation with his girlfriend?
Probably not.
Wouldn't it be funny if they're somewhere?
Oh, he loves Nanette.
They just intellectually spar.
Was she like, let me ask you a question. You weren't getting face fucked in a motel. And he's like, listen.
How'd you know?
Here's the reality. He goes, you know, Nanette.
I just can't with the fucking title.
My podcast partner, Ray Kump, we
it's
made...
It's just named after some chick that she met once.
We like, made... Well, we... I think,
well, that's... Hey, that's what I'm named after. So
we just... Oh, my but God. Here's the other thing. We made... My podcast partner, Ray Kump, we made... We're going to make Raynette.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And this is... Because everyone
I laughed
should...
so hard at that
Everyone
tonight.
Should have a Nanette. Like, I think everyone should have a Nanette. I think everyone should just... go up there and get to the bottom of their shit. And I mean, listen, I think if you're a comedian, it should be funny, but hey.
Yeah.
I mean, she's an interesting lady. I just think, radical, you know.
Beauty. Yeah, yeah. I really did not, like, I didn't, I hated her for doing that. I didn't hate her the way I wanted to.
The reason that I know that I would hate her is because I think she would hate everything that I love. And I love just the ability to say whatever you want in a room.
Right.
I love the ability to offend people, to have conversations, to have debates, to these microaggressions, trigger warnings. This is all horse shit.
Yeah.
You're fetishizing mental illness. None of this is fucking real. People are not that fucking fragile. Stop.
Yeah, yeah.
Stop. They're Everyone's, not. You know, and we've got 90 million pills to cure all of these fucking ailments. It's like, learn how to hear something that you fucking don't like. Learn how to deal with somebody that thinks differently than you. Otherwise, we're going to regress into just where we just kill each other.
And they could do that on your special.
Yes, great. Netflix coming out July 3rd.
It's always good to trash one Netflix special and then to promote another one.
Baby, but that's what it is.
That was my tactic.
That's
here,
what it's like when you're like, your managers tell you to tone it down. It's like, no. And
no.
If they did, I would say, fuck
Fire
you.
Fire him. Yeah.
No,
a manager should never tell a comedian client to tone it down.
You know what
down.
I mean? And I'll open for Nanette. I don't give a shit either because I'm all about my paper. So yeah. Nanette, I'll go around on a tour with you and fuck on Australia. I don't give a shit.
What?
I'll get out there and feed a koala before she comes out.
Oh my God.
The only time you're on stage is when you come out to feed a koala before
why not?
Hannah
I'm glad
comes
we
out.
Did such a fun political episode.
No, it's
so
good.
This is so high minded.
What's the name of your. That's why you did
I
most of the talking.
I talked about fucking, but I knew
you
didn't.
Yeah, that's because you were talking.
I knew you didn't. And I read your book, and it's very smart. And if anyone wants to read it, what is it called? Guys We Fucked.
It's called Fucked. Being it's sexually explorative and self-confident.
It's called Fucked, a discussion of the role of the nation state in a post-Cold War Europe.
Thank you.
I'm so surprised at that. And
hey,
I had no idea. And I read that book and I said, these two.
There's not a chance in hell
taken a
you
Russian
read our
literature
book,
class.
I didn't read the book.
Yeah, no, I know you didn't. I didn't even think it for 1 second. Wait, so what is your Netflix special called?
It's called The Comedy Lineup. It's July 3rd. It comes out. I'm 8th. There's 8 comedians. They put me 8th. Very sweet. Thank you. Netflix, it's a 15-minute special. You get in and out. It's really fun, real quick.
Oh, I thought this was a real comedy special you were promoting.
This is a fake one. This is a fake one. This
I'm
is
so annoyed now.
Listen,
very
you can
convincing.
Watch Nanette, or you can watch my special 8 times. How about you watch my special 8 times? instead of watching Nanette.
Hey,
once.
Netflix gets the dollar either
I
way.
I was so excited for you. I thought you had a real special. No, and then I was like, the comedy lineup, that's a terrible name for a special.
Listen, yeah, I'm like, why are you giving credit to other people?
It's all bad. I should have. If I had done it again, I would have fucking started a podcast about anal. I mean, you know what I mean? But it's 15 minutes. Listen,
hindsight's 2020.
It's the new, I fully believe if these things kind of take off.
15 minutes. Okay.
I love the Netflix 15 minute special. I love their first line, their first run of it. It was great.
Well, this is the first run of it. The other ones were half hours.
Oh, they were half hours.
Well, here's the deal with the
They were so funny. They felt like 15 minutes.
That's what I said to my friend who had one.
I think that the 15 minutes is interesting because I watched it, and here's the reality. You kind of don't need more than 15 minutes.
Well, 15 minutes is what most comedians are working in every night anyway. 15 minutes is a sweet spot.
You really don't. Here's the thing. You want an hour of drama. It's kind of like, unless it's Chappelle, you don't need an hour from like anyone.
Yeah, it's like, we've got it.
It's really, but
I always thought an hour was too long.
Tim Dillon, Comedy Lineup. Thank you very much.
Yay. And where can we find you on social media?
Tim J. Dillon, D-I-L-L-O-N on Twitter and Instagram. My Instagram's kind of funny.
A lot of good food.
There's pictures. Some good food there. There's, you know, I have my friend in LA is this really good, funny cat that I take photos with.
Oh, I was wondering whose cat that was. I thought that was your cat.
No, it's Oscar. He lives in LA.
Oh, okay.
He lives in West Hollywood.
That is your animal counterpart. It's amazing.
Great.
I love him.
He's great.
I follow him very closely.
He's great.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm just living life at timdillancomedy.com if you want to see me live. But I put all the live shit on Twitter and Instagram, too.
Good. Awesome. Good. Thanks for coming back.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you very much. Congratulations. July 3rd, Netflix, the comedy lineup. This has been, guys, We Fuck the Anti-Slut Shaming Podcast. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Saturn on the beach.
Third Love is passionate about the perfect fit, and they believe it's time for your bra to fit you, not the other way around. Their collections are designed by women for women, so you will have the love you feel under each and every look. And now they offer over 70 sizes and more than a dozen styles, so you'll find the perfect bra for every moment and every outfit. Get 15% off your first purchase by going to thirdlove, thirdlove.com/GWF today.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.